Welcome to the Autism and Neurodiversity Podcast.
We're here to bring you helpful information from leading experts and give you effective tools and support. I'm Jason Grigla, a licensed counselor and founder of Techie for Life, a specialized mentoring program for neurodiverse young adults.
And I'm Debbie Grigla, a certified life coach. And maybe most importantly, we're also parents to our own atypical young adults. Hello, welcome. So glad to have you back with us. We've took a little break because we've been so busy with our free mini course, Parenting to Mentor. But we're back at it here on the podcast and glad to have you joining us again. And today I wanted to talk to you about why we take a developmental focus and why that developmental focus is so important. Have you ever thought, how do I get my child, my teen, my young adult to, and then you fill in the blank, eat their vegetables or clean their room or take out the trash, brush their teeth or get a job, be motivated, get up in the morning, do their homework, all of these things that we're trying to get them to do? Or if you're a teacher in a classroom, how do you get your students to be quiet or to do the things you're wanting in the classroom? Whatever role you're in, how do you get them to fill in the blank? And often this question, and we get this question a lot, or some version of it, often what's behind that is a lot of frustration, sometimes even anger or annoyance or even just a sense of overwhelm. And chances are, if you've asked this question, asking it from a behavioral lens. If you have an autistic or a neurodivergent, and you're approaching it from a behavioral lens, you're going to run into extra trouble with it. It's not great for neurotypicals, but for a neurodivergence, you're going to hit a lot more problems. And so I want to encourage you to see things from a developmental lens. And I'm going to explain what I mean by this. And it's important because it's the difference between applying quick fixes to a situation versus supporting their long-term development. And it's like slapping on masking tape over a big giant crack in the road. And nothing against masking tape. It is very useful for many things. But, you know, putting it over a crack in the road is not a long-term solution. That would be that behavioral lens. Well, it looks covered, so we're good. But the developmental lens is actually going in, let's fill in that gap. Let's fill in that crack in the road and actually fortify it and make it stronger in that weak spot if we can. And what happens is we see things through a behavioral lens. We are often sending messages of shame to our young person that there's something's wrong with them, that they're a problem. Or we're also internalizing those shame messages about ourselves, that if our kid isn't doing the thing that we want them to do, or they don't stop doing the thing that we don't want them to do, there's something wrong with us as a parent or a teacher or coach. We're making a mistake, or that we're not good. And when we take a developmental approach and we have a developmental lens, it's so cool to see the confidence that that instills in our young people and that inner confidence that we build in ourselves. And so what I mean by a developmental lens, and I talk about it a lot, but reiterate here, when we have a behavioral lens, we have a behavior focus. We're looking at their behavior and we're wanting it to be different than it is. We're wanting to change that behavior, wanting to teach that behavior or manipulate that behavior. And often what we're doing is manipulation. We're trying to get that check mark. We're trying to win that trophy. We're trying to get what we want from them. And when we have a developmental lens and a developmental approach, it's about meeting our young person where they're at and looking at where they're at. It's looking at where they're at physically, mentally, emotionally, where they're at maturity-wise, socially. We're looking at all the different areas of where they're at, and we're meeting them there. And then we're looking at how can we help and support them on the path that they're on. right? What is their potential? What are their strengths? How can we maximize those strengths? What are some of their weaknesses that are keeping them stuck? How can we support them in minimizing some of those weaknesses or helping accommodate them so that they can keep going even with weaknesses? It's supporting them and helping them get what they need, have what they need, be able to make progress, and doing it with them. We're in it with them so that they can evolve, so that they can be their best self, that they can develop who they innately are. And when you take that approach, those check marks, the behaviors kind of take care of themselves. And you realize it's not about the check marks. It never was about the check marks. It's about developing the unique individual that we've been entrusted with. So that's kind of the difference in the lens. But there are some obstacles to making that shift. And I think there's a tendency, many of us have a tendency to personalize the behaviors that we're seeing. Personalize, meaning when our kid exhibits an undesirable behavior or they aren't displaying a desirable behavior, we make it mean something about us as a parent or a teacher or a person in their life that we've done something wrong or that we're not good. And a lot of that is not our fault. That is coming from society. We've been socialized to believe that. And when you're out there, you see it all the time. If a kid makes a mistake, oh, it's the parent's fault. They must not have taught him, or they must not have been disciplining him, or they must not be doing a good job. And it's really unfortunate because it puts a lot of pressure on parents and makes it even harder for them to show up as good parents when we are so quick to judge instead of offering support. You know, the kid in the store that their child is throwing a temper tantrum because they want the treat right there at the register and they're having a meltdown and evil looks, angry looks, or just, you know, judgmental looks from people instead of like, hey, I totally get it. It's so hard. Let me help you and be there. Like, society really is hard on parents and it's very unfair and it's very unfortunate and it's not helping. It doesn't help the kids and it's not helping the parents. This is one of the challenges of seeing things through a behavioral lens. And another one of the challenges with making that shift from a behavioral lens to a developmental lens is that behavioral approaches do kind of work. I mean, slap that masking tape over that crack in the road and it does cover up the crack. These approaches do seem to work. And they can be very tempting and we can fall into it. If I yell at my kids and makes them do the thing, it can be very tempting to keep yelling. We keep reinforcing that. And it's hard to, when you're wanting that quick fix in the moment, to take a step back and look at, oh, if I yell at my kid, what is that going to do to them? And how is that impacting them down the road? And is it worth it? And sometimes quick fixes are worth it and you do them here and there, but a lot of the time it's not worth it. And there can be a lot of damage that's done. There's a really great example of this. So I'm going to share two examples to kind of contrast this. So there was a sports team that they got a new coach, and that new coach was all about the win. He really was competitive and he really, really wanted to win. And so he coached that team with that as his goal. His goal was to get that check mark, to get that trophy, to win. He didn't like the way the previous coach did it. They weren't winning enough. He wanted to win. And hey, it's so fun to win. Like, everybody loves winning. It's a great thing, right? So he goes in and that was his focus, is how to win. So how did he approach it? He always put his best players in. They played most of the time. His players that weren't as strong of players sat on the bench most of the time. He would yell at the team. He would get on them. He would push them really, really hard. They would go to tournaments, out of town tournaments. And he would recruit and invite the best players from other teams in our area to go play in the tournament with his team. And they would win. They would get wins. And he would play the best players from other teams and his best players, and the less top players on that team would sit on the bench. And they were getting wins. He was effective at that. Fast forward a year or two later, I can't remember exactly the details on it, but over time, that strategy to get the wins, it was all about that, it started to fail. The players on his team that weren't getting as much play felt terrible. They hated being on that team. They felt not invested in. They felt bad. It wasn't a good experience. They weren't getting the practice. They weren't learning and growing on that team. Just the best players were. So the best players were getting better and better, but the ones that struggled were getting worse. And they quit. One by one, these kids on that team quit. And over time, that team fell apart. Like, it just was not sustainable. And so, yeah, they were getting wins in the short term, but in the long run, they ceased to exist. The team dissolved. And unfortunately, a lot of players that had a lot of potential and loved the sport that they were in, they quit. They quit that sport for good. It left such a bad taste in their mouth. They never wanted to play it again. And they'd had such a negative experience, and it beat down their self-esteem, and there was a lot of anger and resentment and bitterness about it. So unfortunate to watch that, because that team originally had been a great team with a lot of camaraderie and having a lot of fun and good experiences. They weren't winning every game, but it was a good team. There was good things happening there. And unfortunately, with that focus on winning, they actually lost in the long run. Now, I contrast that with a team that our son was on. And it was a water polo team. And it was a new sport in the area. This coach was bringing it to the area, and we saw an advertisement for it, and it just hit me like, oh my goodness, this is the perfect sport for our son. Had all the elements that he enjoyed. I just thought, I know he's going to love this. And so when I told my son about it, he was like, no, I don't know. He didn't really know what water polo was, and he was nervous about it, was unsure about it. I'm like, please, just go and just try it out for one day. Just give it a shot. You don't have to join if you don't want to. I just want you to give it a try. I think you're going to really like it. If not, we'll just, you know, no big deal. So he went, and sure enough, he fell in love with it. He was totally all about it and all in. It was combining. He was a good swimmer already and loved the water. And then it's kind of wrestling and grappling, and it just has so many other elements of like soccer and football and different things all in one sport. And he loved it. And what was so wonderful to watch was this coach that came in. He knew that he was starting a new program, and he was all about developing the team and developing the players. And that meant that they did not win all the time. And even in the beginning, probably not very much of the time. But he focused on developing those players. And he invested in them. And he worked on the fundamentals and taught them skills. And when they would be in games, if they were ahead, he would start putting all of his sort of second string players, right? He'd put in pull the star players out, and he'd put in all the other players in to get tons and tons of practice. And if they were losing terribly, he would do the same thing. Well, we're already losing. He would put those players in and give them extra play time in the game. And he cared about those players. He invested in them, not just in their sports, you know, water polo skills, but he invested in them as people, as teenagers, in who they were. He cared about the players, and he built relationships with the players, and he held them to high standards. And at one point, one of the star players on this team, really good, he engaged in some behaviors that were not okay, that were unacceptable, that were inappropriate. And the coach worked with him, and it just, this player didn't stop. He kept doing it. And so the coach made the hard decision of asking this player, he suspended him from the team because it was so serious in nature. And that player said, I quit. I'm not going to be on this team. And he went and played on an opposing team. And that was a tough blow. But that coach made the decision because he cared about his players. He cared about developing their character and who they were. And there were consequences for certain behaviors. And this young man would not change it and make it right. And so that was a huge hit on that team. But I'll tell you what, this coach developed that team, and they, over time, they started winning and they started playing very strong, and they played in many championship matches and did very well. And it was so fun to watch the progress of the players and the team as a whole, and to see their development and growth year after year. And it was an incredible experience for our son. And even more so, it was incredible because of the development of his character and who he was as a person, more than any win would give him. It was who he became as someone that was capable and confident and could do hard things and be a part of a team and keep showing up and keep trying. And just the development of the young people was the most beautiful part of that whole experience. And that is, to me, just such a great contrast of a behavioral checkmark kind of approach, get the win, have to have the success, that the trophy, versus let me develop the players and the team, and then how that starts to look. Now, how do we do this, especially with our autistic and our neurodivergent young people that struggle? And I just want to encourage you that shifting your focus to development and developing them, not changing their behaviors, is going to be where it's at for you. And I've just noticed personally times where I'm feeling frustrated or annoyed or angry or just overwhelmed by things, I've noticed in myself that I'm slipping back into behavioral approaches or that behavioral lens. And when I take that step back and I take a look at my young person and where they're at and how can I support their development, everything shifts and I'm able to come up with ways to support them and connect to them instead of like doing the power struggle of getting them, trying to get them to do a behavior. I'm able to actually tap into what do they need right now? And a lot of times it's like, they just need to feel good. When we feel bad, when we're stressed, when we're overwhelmed, we don't show up well. And when we feel good about ourselves and that people care about us, we can do more. We're more capable when we feel loved and cared for and nurtured and invested in. And so this is such a pivotal thing, and it takes some adjustment to shift and get this lens. And it can be a little extra challenging when you have a partner or spouse or co-parent or teachers or coaches or other people involved that don't have this lens. But we can start practicing it, and we can be the ones that start doing it and having that influence and showing others how to mentor our young people and mentor their development. And it's work worth doing. And it's what we teach and coach on and do in our free mini course. And you can still catch the replays, and it's what we do going forward in our program. So I want to encourage you to start trying on that developmental lens if you haven't. And if you are seeing things through a developmental lens, notice where you might be still having some of the old behavioral approaches. A lot of times where you're having frustration, that might be what's playing into it. So that's what I have for you on this episode. And I just hope you have a great week. Take care.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Autism and Neurodiversity with Jason and Debbie. If you want to learn more about our work, come visit us at jasondebbie.com. That's jasondebbie.com.